Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 19, 2019. Officials with the SPLM-IO say Riek Machar will not return to Juba before May 12.
The SPLM-IO is one of the five signatories to the agreement. And we as a government, we wish if the parties could agree so that we enter a smooth transition.
And an opposition leader says he is a victim of gender-based discrimination.
The authorities are the one victimizing me. There is no complaint from anyone, of having committed any crime. There is a perception that people believe that leaders should not associate with women and should not be part of the women.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Rebel leader Riek Machar is supposed to be in Juba by May 12 to participate in the formation of the new transitional government of national unity as stipulated in the September revitalized peace deal. But a top opposition official says security arrangements for the transitional period have not been completed. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Kang Chol, who represents the SPLM-IO on the National Pre-Transitional Committee, or NPTC, the body charged with implementing the peace deal, told the French news agency on Wednesday, Machar will only return to Juba to help form the transitional government if the security arrangements are in place. The SPLM-IO has proposed delaying the formation of the transitional government for 6 months because implementation of the peace deal is far behind schedule. Information Minister Michael Makwe says Machar's absence will affect the peace process.
The SPLM-IO is part and parcel of the agreement. It is one of the five signatories to the agreement. And we as a government, we wish if the parties could agree so that we enter a smooth transition. But of course, in the absence or in case one party objects and the rest are in agreement, it will be up to the parties to agree.
Makwe says the NPTC is scheduled to start meeting next week to discuss whether to keep the May 12 deadline for forming the new government or to agree on a delay. Chapter 2 of the peace agreement requires that all the parties can turn, unify, train, and deploy their various forces jointly in a period not exceeding more than 80 months, which is due to end on May 12. The deal also stipulates that all parties must agree on redefining President Salva Kiir's 32 states before the formation of the new government. South Sudan military spokesman Major General Lulurwai Kwang confirms the parties have yet to complete the security arrangements as required in the peace agreement.
I'm afraid to tell you that we are behind schedule in terms of making all the arrangements required for the government to be formed in May 2019. The primary challenge we have had was funding.
Kwang says the parties were expected to canton, unify, train, and deploy at least 110,000 forces into one national army, police officers, and national security agents by the May deadline, but most of these activities have yet to be carried out. He says the parties have so far agreed to train and unify a joint force of 700 men and women to provide security for top officials in the new government. The military needs at least 45 days to fast-track the training of the joint forces, Kwang says, and there is not nearly enough time to do so.
It wouldn't be possible for the arrangements to be met in the next four or 5 weeks. It's practically impossible. It is actually less than a month.
SPLM-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lampaul Gabriel says despite the challenges, the parties have made some progress in confidence building and mitigating tensions in parts of the country where sporadic fighting was still occurring.
Machers, we really have challenges. We have achieved a lot. And among them is that the permanent ceasefire is being observed by the warring parties, and as is stipulated in Article 2.1.1 and Article 2.1.2 of the Revitalized Arsis. It is holding so far since November last year. A cantonment site for all opposition have been established have been identified, and the establishment is ongoing.
The NPTC passed a budget of $285 million for implementation of the peace agreement. Most of that, $245 million, is set aside for security arrangements. So far, the government has released $10 million to fund security arrangements. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
A member of an opposition coalition is denying reports that he is being kicked out of Dembesh Hotel in Juba. Peter Mayen Jongdit, who represents a coalition of political parties implementing the revitalized peace deal, says he did not receive any notice from the hotel management asking him to leave. South Sudan in Focus obtained a copy of a letter written by the operation manager of the Dembesh Hotel, notifying the National Pre-Transitional Committee about a decision to remove Mayen from the hotel. The hotel management says in the letter that the South Sudanese politician hosted a married woman in his room, which led to security personnel storming the hotel on Monday, causing other guests to panic.
I have never seen the letter, and at the same time, I'm still residing in the hotel. I have not got any notifications for me to evacuate the hotel. I'm still getting my services as in the hotel, though I don't eat from the hotel itself. And basically, I don't know anything at all about the letter.
Did you have any experience on Monday with the police and security people coming to your room?
Yes, I had the experience, but not to kick me out of the hotel. You know, I live in a suite. So basically, I have my living room and I have my sitting room where I receive visitors. And I live in the platform, so I cannot be coming down every time to receive visitors. What happens basically, I've been receiving for the last 3 months visitors frequently from every time to them within my sitting room. Then I talk to them and they just leave normally. But with the Monday incident, what happened was that my cousin called me and he sent to me her daughter. And then the daughter came was to pick some money and she came with a friend. And the friend she came with, she was a female. I delivered their money and then I went. They left. So I actually felt being a victim of gender discrimination.
Who is victimizing you? You're saying you feel like you're a victim of gender discrimination. Who is victimizing you?
The authorities are the one victimizing me. There is no complaint from anyone, okay, of having committed any crime. There is a perception and people believe that leaders should not associate with women and should not be part of the women. And that has never happened with me. So it is the authorities that are victimizing me.
And someone would say, in the name of transparency, you're supposed to meet people in the open, because if you meet them behind closed doors, you're opening yourself up for any interpretation.
I am transparent. There is no case has been brought forward by any accused person accusing me. We were about five people in the room. We were not the three of us or anyone. We were all the five of us who were in the room.
You say that you are being targeted because you're vocal about the corruptions in the pre-transitional committee. What's going on there?
Yeah, there is a lot of corruptions going on, and that's why I'm vocal. And that's why I'm saying the government needs to be formed so that there's a government of interested parties. So that's the issue here. And this is what is being targeted me for. All over the years, since I started my career or political, I have never had any scandal of that kind. But still, I will still maintain my general perspective about women. Women should not be discriminated. Women are part of society and they have the rights and all this. And the woman who was accused, according to her interview, she said nothing, and I even don't know Peter's name last time. I only know him as Peter Mayen, and I don't know much about politics. I was just from the lunch with my friends, with my cousin, that just came in, just wanted to visit his friend. his cousin.
Yes.
That's the whole story.
Yes. What are the standard protocols or rules at this hotel? Are you allowed to bring anybody in your room?
It's allowed. You know, it's the standard protocol in Khartoum differs from the standard protocol that we have here. In Khartoum, you can, a female can even step to your room. That is understandable. But in South Sudan, it's a peace and a liberal society that everybody live by its conscience and the law take its course. So basically, I don't understand this issue because basically there's no accusations from a female going to the police station saying that I have been raped or I have been sexualized by Peter Mayen. It is the authority now getting a case for a basic that why do I allow females into the hotel when actually there was no rules in the hotels that says that a female could have been. And I have been receiving a lot of females, my party's members, the women of my parties and everybody.
That's Peter Mayen Jongdid, leader of the People's Liberal Party. He was speaking to me from Juba yesterday. More than 130 young people from the Greater Bahr al-Ghazal region meeting in Wau say they will turn away from violence and tribalism and shun politicians who encourage revenge attacks and cattle raids on other communities. As Michael Atit reports for VOA from Wau, the young men and women say they will support the revitalized peace deal.
University students and other youth from across the Greater Bahr al-Ghazal region gathered at the University of Bahr al-Ghazal in Wau to take part in the three-day forum on conflict prevention. Atem Nial Agoth, a third-year student of economics at the University of Bahr al-Ghazal from Warabi State, says some local politicians are known of luring youth to participate in deadly revenge attacks and cattle raids in the neighboring communities.
We as the youth are the center of abuse, are the center of violence, are the center. Whatever is happening in South Sudan is in our hands as the youth. It is youth who are having guns in their hand. It is youth who fight. It is youth who are dying. It is youth who are unemployed. It is youth who are hurt by this crisis going on in South Sudan.
Daniel Maper Magon, who represents the Greater Lakes Youth Union in Wau, says violence fueled by hatred for other ethnic communities hinders efforts to move South Sudan forward. Revenge attacks have been common in Lake State, Magon says, and he's calling on the young people to turn away from violence and work toward developing the area.
The unity we was lost actually has pulled us back, so we have to come back again and regain ourselves in which we have lost. So we come from different places and we interact with so many groups, many youths, and we come to realize that unity is better, to live in coexistence, in peaceful coexistence is better.
Bibiana Adriano Taban, who hails from Wau State, says the five-year conflict has left South Sudanese divided along tribal lines. Speaking in Arabic, Taban says the country will only witness peace and stability if people begin to see themselves as one people rather than members of tribes.
The main cause of problem in Wau here is tribalism, followed by the cattle migration towards the farmlands. So we discuss a lot on these two issues and we resolve that the cattle keepers need to be enlightened and educated on how they should respect the farmlands. And we should also all accept ourselves as South Sudanese.
Stephen Robo Musa, who organized the forum, is the Wau Area Manager for the National NGO Community Empowerment for Progress Organization, or SEPO. Musa encourages youth to see the country's ethnic diversity as a good thing.
Our tribe is not bad because God has created us in that way. But how we look each other, how we perceive each other, that is our own making, and we are responsible for that. It's not a mistake of God. To be black or white is not a choice. To be from Dinka, Luo, or Fertit, whatsoever, is not a choice. It happened, you are there. It shouldn't be used as an opportunity of eliminating each other.
Wau State Information Minister Mary Rose Mariano warns young people against using illegal drugs, which she says can lead to violent acts.
Don't joke with your life. Don't joke with your future. Take care of yourself. Take care of your future. Take care of the future of the state. Take care of the future of South Sudan. Our hope is in you. If you carelessly go about harming yourselves and harming your future, then what do we do with the country?
Heavily armed clashes have been ongoing in Wau since June 2016 between the government forces and opposition fighters allied to rebel leader Riek Machar, ending in many deaths and displacing thousands of civilians in Wau. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese protesters step up the pressure on the military council for change. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
has the concept of friendship changed in our time? Why or why not?
The concept of friendship has changed over the time. We have virtual friends, friends that they have not met but can communicate without even having to be in the same country. Then they get to share a lot of things that normal friends would have done.
In the olden times, when you're a friend to someone, it's more or less like a genuine thing. But now, it's like what I can gain from you, that's why I'm being friend to you.
The way you handle it, if you see that person is not well with you, you let that one go. But of course, there is that very person whom you go to and they will be really friends with you. Me, I have friends that become like even my sisters, yet we are just friends.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Leaders of Sudan's ongoing protest have stepped up pressure on the transitional military council that replaced ousted former President Omar Hassan al-Bashir. The protesters have announced plans to form their own civilian council to convince Sudan's military to give up power. Naba Mohiyadin has this report for VOA from Khartoum.
Thousands of protesters responded to calls by the Sudanese Professionals Association to rally on Thursday in central Khartoum. Protesters flooded the streets leading to Sudan's army headquarters, calling for Sudan's transitional military council to allow a swift return to civilian rule. SVA co-founder Mohamed Naji says they are demanding the military deliver power to the people. He says they called for a civilian presidential council, but with military representation, to fulfill the Sudanese revolution's demands. The SPA has urged all parties to nominate leaders for a civilian transitional council. The demonstrators were divided into groups of doctors, lawyers, journalists, bankers, and engineers. Protesters Muhammad Ahmed is with his doctors' committee. He says they will stay in the sit-in until the revolution's demands are fulfilled, and they won't go back to their homes before this happens. The protesters have been camped in front of army headquarters since April 6, refusing to disperse even after the military said last week it had ousted former President Omar al-Bashir. Sudan's military says it placed Bashir under house arrest, but reports on Wednesday quoted sources saying he had been moved to a federal prison. On Wednesday night, Sudan's military council said it had detained Bashir's brothers, Abdullah and Abbas, as part of efforts to remove symbols of what it called a corrupt regime. The military council announced also the dissolution of security forces loyal to Bashir, saying they would come under the authority of the army and police. Despite the reported arrests, protesters such as Maynoor remain skeptical. She says they hear that Bashir is in jail, but they don't want him to be sent to another place. They want a public trial for all crimes he committed in Darfur, says Noor, for the genocide and killing protesters. The council on Monday gave Sudan 15 days to allow a civilian-led transitional government or face suspension in the African Union. Sudan's protests began in December, when fuel and food shortages led to price hike and calls for Bashir to step down, and then a military coup that removed him from 3 decades in power. Naba Mohiyadin for VOA News, Khartoum.
From Khartoum, we move to Juba, where activists are praising Sudanese protesters for conducting a peaceful demonstration which led to the downfall of former President Omar al-Bashir. But some activists say they worry that the unfolding developments in Khartoum may affect the implementation of the South Sudan peace deal. Ding Magot has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudanese civil society leaders say they worry about the fate of the revitalized peace deal after the protests that began in December eventually led to Omar al-Bashir's ouster from the presidential palace to Kubar prison. Betty Sunday, coordinator of a Juba-based Women's Monthly Forum, says Sudan played a critical role in persuading President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar to silence the guns in South Sudan.
Our leaders also listened to the leaders in Sudan, so they signed the peace agreement. But now the worry is that since the leadership in Sudan has been changed, what is the faith? What is the faith of the peace agreement? Will the new leadership buy the idea of supporting the peace agreement need to be implemented in South Sudan?
Asif Kafi is a peace activist, musician, and a poet with the group Anataban. Kafi says there is a lot to learn from the Sudanese protesters.
I think it is very interesting what has happened so far in the uprising in Sudan. First of all, I appreciate the fact that the transition has been quite peaceful. People are expecting it to be out of hand. One thing that I'm skeptic, though, about how I negatively have the effect on the uprising.
Media reports on Wednesday said Bashir has been moved from house arrest to federal prison. Unnamed members of Bashir's family told the Reuters news agency, the BBC, and other media outlets that the former president was moved to Kubar prison in Khartoum late Tuesday. Prison guards told CNN they saw Bashir's arrival at the facility. During his 30-year autocratic rule, Bashir locked up many of his opponents in Kubar prison. Peter Deng, an administrative secretary at Women Empowerment Program, says South Sudan depends on Sudan for many reasons.
When the situation is not going on well in Sudan, it will also affect South Sudan in a way that Sudan has been our mother country, and we have been taking a lot of measures from them, the way they do their things and the way also political powers are run. We have been looking that in Sudan.
The new leader of Sudan's Transitional Military Council said last week he is committed to transferring power to a civilian government within 2 years. Lieutenant General Abdel Fattah Burhan made the announcement during his first televised address. Burhan said he also ordered the release of all prisoners jailed under emergency laws ordered by then-President Bashir. Sudanese women have been in the forefront during the 4 months of protest. A women empowerment activist in South Sudan says leaders are not permanent. Florence Agikoru says she hopes for a peaceful transition in Sudan.
Leaders come and go, and the people have power. Our leaders must be good to the people. We pray for a peaceful transition of governments in the whole of Africa, because peace in one country is peace in the whole of the continent.
President Kiir's advisor on security led the delegation to meet with the new military leader in Sudan on Wednesday. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba Town.
It has been over a week since former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir was overthrown after ruling the country for 30 years. SIN Deng Bio reports, the news is still bittersweet for many Sudanese in the diaspora.
Sara El Hassan, a Phoenix-based freelance writer and editor, still doesn't believe that Omar al-Bashir, the only president she has known in her adult lifetime, was toppled by street protest.
It's hard for me to say that it's a win because we're still fighting. The battle is still ongoing. But I definitely think that this is a major motivational push for people to see the figure that has terrorized them for 30 years gone can only fuel their determination, fuel their desire, and give them patience and strength to continue and make sure that they see this thing through.
El Hassan says the demonstrators have a hard task ahead of them, fighting oppressive laws in the country. Sudan's public order laws regulate the freedom of women, including freedom of association and work. The country's Islamic laws allow girls to be married off at a younger age. One in three women are married before the age of 18, and the United Nations says 9 out of 10 women have undergone female genital mutilation. Many say freedom of the press did not exist during Bashir's rule. Sudan has been among the least free countries around the world, according to Reporters Without Borders' latest Global Press Index. Journalists in the country have complained about al-Bashir's regime targeting journalists and restricting freedom of the press. El-Hassan says civil society activists have a lot of work to fight decades-long laws and norms that have restricted the Sudanese people.
We have to be in it for the long haul. I think that this is a process that might prove, or most likely will prove, lengthy, and that we need to be able to support in any way we can and have the patience to, you know, to go the distance, because being away is frustrating. You're not on the ground. You know what's happening because you're following, but you don't really have an accurate or, a specific detailed sense of what's going on.
El-Hassan says the popular months-long protest will be remembered by generations of Sudanese who have not seen freedom.
This is a revolution of consciousness. What a lot of people are saying, this is a revolution of intellectual, emotional, social, political, whatever, consciousness. It's not just about ousting the government. It's not just about ousting Bashir. It's about a complete overhaul of Sudan as a society, as a political structure. We need to rebuild from the ground up, because over the last 30 years, our country has been destroyed, really.
The Sudanese Professionals Association is demanding a government run by civilians, adding no military government will rule Sudan again. Ayen Dengbior, VOA News, Washington.
That report by my colleague Ayen Dengbior brings us to the end of our show for this week. We now leave you with the song Empty Vows by Asif featuring Tula.
He touched mine eyes with fingers light, asleep in the dark. And like a frightened eagle's eye, they opened up with prophecies.
Shack upon the beach.
Empty vows in a wasted name. You can change the rules for say, but you cannot change the game. If the feeling ain't the same, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my baby, you can hear me call, but you cannot hear me cry, hear me cry. Empty vows in a wasted name.
I well greet the missive, speak to a tone. No grave upon earth shall clip Africa's new imp. Mortal wretch, yet so royal. Are we gonna change, for we are this commonplace? I get out of my closet with heavenly set noise, needless of a child's wish, being born supremely of the artistic influence, bringing a life of being to being alive. We watch the sun dusk dawn and what the heavens pour upon. Obvious, thy words lamented, our ghost left wandering, playfully fond of an imagination policy, cunning to the nearest censure. My wit tells we that thee.
Empty vows in a wasted name. You can change the rules for say, but you cannot change the game. If the feeling ain't the same, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my baby, you can hear me call, but you cannot hear me cry, hear me cry.
It's rules, not mirrors, that steal our souls. Even those who stayed alive found grave in each other's survival. Fitters, two different worlds, one of trees, the others of engines. Clear or dark, you find that war was fought for the covers of stone. Art plus language plus direction, the old days communication. Prove that songs of the wandering is all in the trees, and watch by the first star, the pestilence is talks.
We've been listening to Asif and Tula with the song Empty Vows. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We invite you to share your comment with us on Twitter. Our handle is at VOA South Sudan. If you are planning to be out of Juba and cannot tune to an FM station that can bring this program to you, you can still listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kHz, 13865 kHz, and 15180 kHz. Have a safe weekend And join us on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
But you cannot hear me cry, hear me cry.
Broken promises given to the shattered...